Want to drive greater success in social commerce? With Deloitte's latest creator economy research, you can. After surveying over 500 creators and 500 brands, our insights are helping CMOs and marketing teams harness the power of content creators. And not only that, but how to do it well. See for yourself by visiting cmo.deloitte.com today.
What is the first brand you remember making an impact on you as a young girl?
Probably Nike. I remember being 10 years old and getting my first pair of Nike running shoes, and the positivity it felt that there was actually a brand geared towards making me a better version of in my sports world, and it became fashionable and chic to wear Nike. So I would say at a very young age, that's probably the one that stands out.
Hi, I'm Jim Stengel, and I help major brands find their purpose and activate it, and the profits follow. For 7 years, I was the global marketing officer for Procter & Gamble, where I oversaw the marketing of hundreds of brands. You may not know it, but the CMOs, the chief marketing officers of all of your favorite brands, are trying to connect you with your favorite products and services through purpose. And on this show, I delve into how they do it. My guest today on the CMO podcast is Lara Abrash, the chair of Deloitte US. Lara was promoted to the chair role in June 2023, where she runs the largest professional services firm in the United States with about 170,000 people in her organization. Lara has been at Deloitte for about 18 years, beginning as an audit partner in 2005. She earned her bachelor's in economics at SUNY Albany and her MBA in accounting from Baruch College. I invited Lara on the show to talk about how she is approaching leading the largest professional service firm in the U.S., and we certainly explore that, but the show takes an interesting turn. Lara is an unabashed believer in the power of sports in building future women leaders, and we get into that in some depth. We also talk about the enormous economic opportunity for brands in the still massively underdeveloped area of women's sports. This is my conversation with the chair of Deloitte US, who is still playing competitive softball. Here's Lara Abrash. Lara, welcome to the CMO podcast. Excuse my voice. My daughter just got married, and my voice is absolutely shot. My emotions are up and down. So I've had one heck of a week. So have you had a more peaceful week than the father of the bride has had?
I definitely have. First, mazel tov and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
My daughter has a boyfriend, and that's already enough for me for the week. So I couldn't even imagine a wedding.
You know, it was one of those, it was like an Indian wedding. It went on forever. We had multiple parties, and we had, it was in San Diego. A lot of people traveled from Philadelphia, from New York, from Cincinnati. So we had a lot of travelers. They made it a holiday. And of course, we were more than happy to host parties whenever people were game. So yeah, I feel great. But man, I am sort of exhausted and very sentimental.
Oh,
I have to say. So this is my first thing I've really done after the wedding.
I'm sure for all the effort going into it, it was probably a great day. And although it changes things, it probably isn't changing things as much as everybody worries about. Which I think with these big life events, I don't know, my kids just went to college and I thought all of a sudden everything was going to change. But actually, I feel like I feel busier with them than I did my entire, you know, raising them. It's just constant with them right now. It's a different emotional level.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, these are the tentpole events in life, right?
So yeah, oh, that's actually a great way of saying it.
Well, listen, you had sort of a tentpole event in the last year. You were promoted to this big role about 5 months ago, chair of Deloitte US, and with something like 170,000 people in your organization. Congratulations. It's amazing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And you follow this long list of women who have been in top jobs at Deloitte, going back to, and your team sent me all the history, 1935, Deloitte elevated a woman to run a major department. So I just want to ask you to start off this discussion, how does it feel to be following this incredible long list of remarkable women who have had top leadership roles at Deloitte? And you've been very progressive in this space. Going back to my days at P&G, I remember having some of the Deloitte people in to talk about DE&I and elevating women to key roles and having the culture that enables that. So I just want to start with, you've had probably a pretty interesting 5 months. How does it feel?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, I often talk about the role as feeling like I've won the lottery. It is an incredible organization. We'll talk a lot, hopefully, about our focus on D&I.
We will.
But, you know, this idea of achieving this role, probably the best part about it was, had it been a decade or two ago, maybe there would have been a different reaction, like we've broken a glass ceiling. I mean, we had the first chairwoman of our CEO, you know, 15, 20 years ago. We had the first CEO of our firm, first CEO in the Big Four profession, you know, 8 years ago. So this idea that this was something new and unique, it wasn't. And I think that's the part that really gives me energy. And, you know, the business world is in such an interesting place. I mean, it's so obvious that there are so many disruptors going on. You know, we have global conflict, we have massive geopolitical issues, we have societal issues. We have technologies emerging in ways that will have a fundamentally outsized impact on our lives. And we have professionals and a workforce that is different than the workforce of a decade or two ago. So being in this role right now has just been amazing because on one hand, while all these things could seem overwhelming, and they are, I am an optimistic person. And I think our firm is a source of good, both in helping businesses solve their most complex issues, but being there for our people to help them be the best versions of themselves and really make an impact that matters in society. And they're just not words. They're real. I joined the firm when we kicked off this women's initiative, and it's the reason I started. And it's one of the many reasons I'm still here today.
Well, we're going to talk about a lot of that you just went through so beautifully, Lara. But you've been in the role about 5 months. What have you learned about yourself as a leader in the last 5 months, right? We all learn a lot about ourselves as we move into new roles, especially when we're promoted. I have a lot of those memories from P&G. So what have you learned about, what's your self-awareness telling you about yourself over the last 5 months?
It's telling me that, one, I can change and evolve. So every different thing I've done in our firm has required a slightly different set of skills and capabilities, a slightly different set of experiences. This role is really different than the roles I've had in the past. A lot of the roles in the past were you're in the flow of the day to day, and you're in the flow of the things that are burning at your feet. And, you know, chairing our firm and our board, your focus is really on like the existential threats, the biggest things. And you have to be able to rise yourself above the day to day. And that's a big change for me. So I learned I could actually do it. It was an area I was worried about, going from operator and driver into a governor and somebody who's focused on, as you earlier said, on a wedding, the long poles in the tent. So that's probably been the biggest positive for me, is that I've been able to really seek that change. And ultimately also talk about not just the areas I've had responsibility for in my entire career, but really be across the marketplace with all the types of clients we serve and all the things that we do. It showed me I have more depth for change and more depth for learning than even I probably thought. So, you know, big changes in the last 5 months. I'd like to say I've transitioned effectively and now feel like I'm in the role officially, but it did require some real changes on how I show up. And, I feel pretty good about it.
How did you decide how to spend your time in the last 5 months?
Well, I understand that the main part of my role, you know, the primary is chair of the board. There are a lot of other things. I'm a full-time person in the chair role. So there are a lot of other things we can do with this role. But I was intentional in making sure a big part of my time in the last 5 months was around actually creating a thriving boardroom, working incredibly close with a new CEO. We have a new US CEO and a new global CEO, and making sure, you know, good old relationship building and trust was formed early on with those individuals as well as my own board, and starting to focus on what do we need to do to evolve our governance. I talked to our firm about aspiring to govern at scale and starting to define what that meant. That's been a disproportionate amount of my time. But it was done for good reason, because it's foundational to driving our firm forward. The other aspects of it, there are a lot of other things we can do with the role. One, I play an outsized role globally for our firm. And so spending time, again, building relationships, understanding what we need to do to globalize our firm and driving our U.S. firm into that has been a big part of my role. And then, of course, spending time with our partners, with our professionals to create what we refer to as sense of partnership. But the main tenets have really been disproportionately focused on building a good, thriving boardroom that creates a great space for discussion, and then ultimately thinking about what do we need to do with the direction of our firm to our boardroom to make it the most effective room it could be.
Larry, I think a lot of people when they come into a new role want to get their teams really working well. And in your case, it's the board. I'd like you to talk a bit about how you do it.
First, I'll start with just a difference between, you know, if you're a new CEO or a new CFO, you typically come in and you pick your team. When you come in to be the chair of a boardroom, you know, most board members have a variety of ways, whether this is in our firm or any other board, that they get there. You don't come in on day one and decide, I don't like this group, I'm going to get another one. So a big part of the transition for me was really understanding how each of the individuals operated and what was important to them. And then how did I put my own, I'll just say, chemistry into it. So I focused a lot on one, making sure they understood this wasn't going to be what Lara thought in the boardroom, but I spent time with all of them to make sure they realized I was there to untap their best thinking. And I would say things like, I want different views. I don't want to hear the same thing from everybody. I want to hear the diversified voices, and I want us all to listen to the dissenting views. So I started to create this chemistry of bringing in the courageous conversation, making it clear that I wasn't going to be that person, that I use the words, I'm your steer. I'm here to steer the board together, but I'm not the person to decide what the board's views are on a variety of matters. And I started over the last few months to create an environment where we hear from everybody. It used to be that there'd be a handful of people who would speak more than others, and now the entire room is engaged. And I spend a lot of time inside and outside of the room to get thoughts that are going into it and reactions that are coming out to it. But my biggest focus is creating an inclusive room where everybody feels like they can say what's on their mind and not be judged or, you know, beaten down. And then ultimately, we're going to come together and we're going to align. And I talk about that being our special sauce.
I can tell already you enjoy your role, but I'd like you to speak a little bit about what do you enjoy the most? Where do you get the most energy from the role you're in?
I think probably a couple things. One is really seeing that room start to elevate their game. When I can sit back and let them debate, even among themselves, we have board-only time from time to time. That's when I get excited because I now know we've sort of unlocked that potential. So that gives me a ton of energy. A big part of my job is spending time with our CEO and the team on the most significant issues. I get a lot of energy. I have a lot of curiosity. And I have a lot of desire to be part of sort of the next wave of things that are going to be impacting the business world and society. That gives me a ton of energy. And then I love being out in the market and sharing with others what I'm seeing and what they're seeing. Because, you know, while many of us compete in different ways, ultimately, we have a lot more in common than not. And I guess my style is I'd like to see all of us in some way or another do well personally and collectively because it's better for society. So I spend a lot of time in the market just making sure we're all sort of recognizing a lot of us are feeling the same way. I mean, it's pretty crazy these days to be in these business leader roles. That's why you see the tenures are pretty short. So I get a lot of energy trying to do what I can to be helpful in the market.
What would you say is the key to success for today's CMO? If you said data, you wouldn't be the only one. At Deloitte, however, we believe data is only half of the equation. The other half, story. Because data is the language of business, but story is the language of humans. And we believe the most successful CMOs know how to harness the power of both data and story. To learn more about Deloitte's CMO program and how we can help today's CMOs succeed, visit cmo.deloitte.com.
Lara, we're going to talk today a little bit later about the opportunity for brands and companies in women's sports, and actually about the importance of women's participation in sports and developing leadership skills. But before we get to that, I'd like you to talk about the role sports played in shaping you as a person and a leader.
Yeah, sports has been an instrumental part of who I am today. I started playing sports. By the way, I'm the youngest of three with three older brothers. So whether I liked it or not, we were going to be throwing, you know, the football around and the baseball around. And I was exposed very early in my life to baseball. My grandparents were early day New York Mets fans. I was brought to games with them when, you know, I was young. I used to be brought to holiday luncheons with some of the Mets players when we were trying to do more things to get women engaged into watching the Mets. So very early from my family, it became something of interest. When I started actually playing, they didn't have softball. I actually played on a boys' baseball team because it was the closest thing my mom could find in our town to allowing me to play sports. But I played on a boys' team. I still remember we made the playoffs and they announced my name. And I think some of the parents from the other team were surprised to see a girl there. But over time, I started playing softball and I still play to this day. I play on a women's over 25 league, although I'll say way over 25. And I didn't think about it. This interesting part of life. You don't necessarily think in the moment what you're learning. I think there's a big thing, like when kids go to school, they're like, why am I learning this? I'm never going to use this. Well, life is a culmination of things that you get exposed to. And in the moment, you may not know why. So a couple of them for me is I learned really early on, and it comes in spades today. I'm actually the manager of that softball team. So I'm the person who is helping everybody get into their positions, calling the situation of the game in the dugout, you know, pumping people up. And what I learned really early on, again, it didn't really hold true until maybe a decade or so ago, is sports teaches you about leadership. And it taught me about leadership. Leadership isn't the person who's the best player on the team. Leadership is the person on the team who makes sure the others are the best versions of themselves. And often leaders feel like they need to be the most expert at X or Y or Z, but leadership is really igniting the brilliance of all of your teammates. And I didn't probably realize that early on how I was learning it, but when I didn't come up and hit one day, but the person behind me could do it, or someone bunted to move someone along in a selfless way, you started to realize that you didn't need to be the best person. Ultimately, the best team is when you got the team to do it. So that was one thing I've learned. Two, I would say it taught me resilience and grit. In sports, you don't always win. There's a 50-50% at best chance you're going to win. But how you, I'll say, win the loss with grit is probably something, again, I learned over the years. In sports, you focus on understanding what happened. Did we not do something right in practice? Did we misplay a ball? Did we not have our strategy right? As opposed to just licking your wounds, you immediately focus on learning lessons from it and moving on. And you create this resilience and this grit. And that's definitely been something that I think is paid spades for me. It teaches you about being a good teammate. Right. Again, you know, this is not about you being the person who goes 4 for 4 in the game. It's about you being a teammate to others so that they all show up. I mean, you could go 4 for 4 and the rest of the 8 players don't hit the ball. Well, that you're not going to win that game. Right. It means your pitcher needs to have a great game. It means the catcher needs to have a great game when everybody gets up to hit and when they're in the field. So it taught me really young the importance of being a good teammate and how you pick someone up when they're not feeling great about their performance, how you encourage and inspire them, and how you ultimately come together. And I guess the last thing I'd say is the importance of communication. And I mentioned I call the plays today. You know, business, a big part of communication in business is making sure people understand the play that needs to be played. And it's about being able to win hearts and minds of people to get them in the right position to do the right thing. And we don't talk about effective communication nearly enough, but sports has been incredibly important to me to create great communication.
Just want to punctuate what you just said there. I totally 100% agree. We don't talk about communication enough. And I don't care how smart you are, how great the strategy is. If you cannot communicate it effectively, it won't work.
That's right.
And I think it's a skill that can be learned. You can get better at it. But I think for all of our listeners, the investment you make in improving your communication skills will have a massive ROI.
Yes.
So before we leave the sports, what did you play when you were on the boys team? And is it the same position you play now?
So when I was young, I was either center field or third base, mostly center field. I had an ability to move really quick back and also cover behind second base. So I was fast. Now I am a first baseman. Because those mobility skills are quite not quite the same as they were when I was young. And so I'm able to basically, I'm also relatively tall, so I'm able to hold my own at first, but I still can hit. So when I was young, I was considered more of a power hitter. I wouldn't put myself quite in that realm today, but I still could hit anywhere between third and fifth in our lineup, depending on the game.
All right. We're going to switch from that to purpose, okay? So we're going to go from sports to purpose, and there's... of course, a lot of connections there. So you're the chair of U.S. Deloitte, and your purpose is quite, you know, a heavy one, I would have to say, in a good way. Your purpose is to make an impact that matters by creating trust and confidence in a more equitable society. I mean, that's fantastic. You have the scale to deliver that with the size of Deloitte. So I'd like you to reflect for a moment about that purpose and its personal resonance with you.
Well, maybe I'll start just if you back up, you know, a lot of people talk about purpose as this loose concept. I mean, many organizations are talking about purpose and why do they have it? And it used to feel like some ad hoc thing to a strategy. But when you really sit back and think about what purpose is, it actually is core to a strategy. It allows professionals to know that they align with an organization they're working with, to share the same values and beliefs. It allows them to know that their work itself, not some other thing they do, the work that they're doing makes a difference. I mean, when our people show up at Deloitte, they are helping clients achieve these immense outcomes by helping them with complicated issues. And we're doing it with the government, we're doing it in commercial spaces, we're doing it for really, I'll just say, needy causes. And so you could sit back and say the work itself really makes me feel good, but they also see the impact that we're having in society. So, you know, from a workforce perspective, it is core to having a thriving workforce. And when you go into the marketplace, it allows you to talk with other businesses about what you do in a different way, because there's a shared view that we all need to contribute to a positive society. And so the things we're doing, both in the work we do, but as well as the ways we're interacting and exchanging in society, is about making it a collective impact. If only one company in the world was focused on climate, if only one company in the world was focused on equity among the people that live out there, if only one company in the world was focused on having positive societal impact, if only one company in the world was focused on trust, we'd be an awful place to live in. Our world would not be a great place. So when I'm out with other business leaders, we are realizing there's a collective impact when purpose is something we all do. So our customers see it as a positive. The people who engage with us see it as a positive. So again, it creates a really good brand. When you talk about purpose, you're not just talking about profits. It creates a brand awareness that's much more favorable than a brand that's just seemingly being viewed about profits. So there's a lot of positivity. And then when you're in the work, in society rather, and you talk about purpose, you start to realize that your professionals, your leaders of whatever organization you're at, they live in their communities. And when they go home, it's interesting that you work for Deloitte. It's interesting that Deloitte does X, Y, and Z. It's interesting that Deloitte grew its revenues by X or Y. But when you can come home and talk about how your employer and how your organization you've spent your entire lives is making a difference in communities at large and in the community where you live, it creates just a positive exponential experience where you have pride at home. So for me, seeing Deloitte as an organization commit to this makes a ton of sense, but it makes a ton of sense when I know that it's something that we're doing when we bring the collective force of a lot of places that we partner with. So a lot of the things we do when we talk about our purpose commitment, it's not Deloitte solely. It's really about how do we convene and bring others to really capitalize on an exponential momentum.
I loved what you just said there, beginning with purpose is is your strategy. Purpose is your work. And when you activate your purpose effectively, you grow your business and you make a bigger impact. Could you speak a bit, give some tips or advice to other leaders who would like to make purpose their daily work, that would like to lead from above in terms of this is what, this isn't a side hustle, this is who we are and what we do. So how do you reinforce that in your communication and your actions and your role modeling?
I would start with making sure it is underpinning the organization strategy. Being able to articulate how a brand comes to life and the positivity of purpose. And brand isn't just for external consumption, as I know all of you know. Brand is also for internal consumption. So making sure all of us understand with intentionality how purpose is undermining and underlying brand and positive brand outcomes, and how and when it comes into the strategy, because you can't just say it, you actually have to do it. So making sure you see it come to life in investment dollars, how you make it's coming to life. Like if your own organization isn't doing anything around equity, you won't have the ability to have, I'll just say, street credentials to go talk about equity externally. So finding the areas of focus that align with your capability, where you see opportunity, where you as an organization believe you can make positive change, and making sure it's fundamental into your strategy and into actions the business is going to take, and that you can actually describe it as center to a brand, not ad hoc to a brand. And then you just need intentionality of leaders to talk about this. This is not, you know, often people look at leaders and they wonder if this is going to be like the passing phase. Are they going to talk about this? And then the next leader is going to come in and we'll talk about something else. And that's how a lot of these things don't have sustaining power. Organizations today, because it's core to a strategy, because it drives better business results and better results for all, and you see that, allows us to have a sustaining power. And then leaders have to just be relentless about talking about it as part of who we are and what we do. And ultimately, there's accountability for engaging in being a purposeful organization and making sure we're all doing our part. But it requires you getting to both the mind and the heart. Intellectually, why is this good for our business? But for the heart, why is this good for all of us? Why we show up every day, why our people show up every day. And there's always going to be in any company, and I think everybody knows this, there's not going to be 100% consensus on every strategic choice we make. This one will get some raised eyebrows because there are people that have lived their entire careers where we didn't talk about this. We're at a decade or so of really seeing purpose really be elevated in organizations. So having the stamina to move forward and not expect 100% alignment is also expected, and it's okay. So be consistent, embedded in the strategy, embedded in the brand when you're out there, making sure it's core to the brand, and hold people accountable and just accept the fact that not everybody is going to be along for the journey, but focus on those who are. The talent coming in expects this. If you want to have the best people as your customers and working with you, if you don't have this, you're just likely not going to have them as customers. So it's really important, and workforce, that you understand that this is a burning platform.
We've all been there. You spend millions of dollars each year driving traffic to your company's website, and then the results come in and they're just not what you hoped. On top of that, 81% of marketing leaders say website ownership is a challenge. So what do you do? Well, you switch to Webflow. Let me tell you why. Webflow's visual-first platform empowers your team to own your company's most valuable dynamic marketing asset, your website. From launching a new site to optimizing for SEO and conversions, Webflow gives you the tools you need to drive business growth fast. Unlock your website's full potential when you build, manage, and host with Webflow. Get started today at webflow.com.
Lara, one way from what I see and understand that you're activating this purpose is to champion women in professional careers, which includes, of course, women in professional sports. So what do you hope to achieve through this focus, both for Deloitte and for society at large?
I think for a few things. One, we think this investment in women's sports will have an outsized impact in creating amazing leaders. You know, we've done our own surveys, and you asked about me to share my experiences and what sports has done for me. I'm not a standalone. know, over 85% of the people we've surveyed, women who've played sports, have basically said this has been an important factor to the success in their careers. And those numbers get even higher when we look at women in leadership roles and women who make a lot of money. So the ability to actually know what you're doing is creating better leaders for us in society is really important. So we know if we invest in girls who play sports, we're helping from a very young age into a midterm to longer age, create better business leaders. And we talked about the skills I've picked up. We see that in the workplace. When we've surveyed women, we hear that teamwork is better, leadership is better, managing stress is better, problem solving is better, communication is better because of the things they learn from competitive sports. So a lot of what we're doing is focused on our own workforce and society at large. Our own workforce, you know, we are starting to see the benefits. You know, we talked a lot about the people who sit in certain roles in my firm. And yes, that's true. We've had a lot of great women sit in a lot of great roles. But when you look at our own people and we ask them about their experiences at Deloitte and what is playing sports meant to them and how does our investing in these things impact them, they feel disproportionately better. We have over 90% of our women feel like they're treated with respect at work. 85% feel like they can bring their authentic self because we're creating an environment where being a woman is special. And it entitles you to be included, not to feel that you need to assimilate. So a big part of this is to get our women to feel great because we know it's proven that sports leads to better outcomes for women. It also leads to better wellness and mental health. We also found that in our survey as well, that women who played sports actually did better when it came to, you know, to mental health. So, you know, doing all of that has been really important for our own people. But back to our purpose, we think investing in sports, also women's sports, allows us to be a force to reckon with, to convene others. So we've done a lot of things. We've been very visible in our own investments in sports. We've been investing for the last few years in a whole set of sponsorships that only a few years ago we had not done, including things like the WNBA, because we think that's really important. We're also investing in the National Women's Soccer League. We're also investing in the U.S. Women's National Team because we understand the power of women's sport, both on and off the court. And by doing this, we start to think we can have this contagion effect. Yes, again, we've had great outcomes with our people. I love the creativity here. We actually got WNBA players to participate in our advertising spots during the playoffs, and they did a role reversal where they were in awe of women in business. And again, this was for the general public at large to feel this contagion of, wow, women in business are pretty amazing. But again, for our own people, there was just huge pride from doing that. So we've seen the benefits from this on the ability to drive success inside our firm and broadly.
I'd like to stay on that for a moment because, I mean, I think a lot of people would be surprised they came from Deloitte. Right? I think they're creative, they're funny, they're strategic. So could you talk a little bit more about the creativity that came out through that campaign? What is it about your culture that enabled that to happen? So could you talk a bit about the inspiration for the campaign and the creativity within Deloitte that resulted in those wonderful ads that are all about your purpose, all about your strategy, and are just plain fun to watch?
Well, thank you. I mean, I'll start with, we have an amazing marketing group. I think part of how you get to these types of outcomes, and we've had a couple years in a row, we're not big advertisers. I'll just start with that. This is not our strategy, is to be splashing in a bunch of places. We are really strategic. A lot of it we do with the sports because it does, again, align to our purpose. But in this particular case, we've had a couple years where we've basically have created an environment of just tell us, like, what would really resonate with these audiences? Often the people who are great at running our firm doesn't necessarily mean that we're great at understanding the audience that will be watching these ads or what would resonate with our own workforce. So this group from our marketing organization really, you know, they had the ability to say, we could take a risk. We could do something new and unique. And they came back with this amazing idea of, you know, how we today, because we already go to all these WNBA games. We have a great relationship with the WNBA, and we have players that come and speak with us. There's a ton of benefit we get from the WNBA and with our own workforce, but it's always a one-way direction where all of us are in awe of what they're doing. And if you link it also to, some people are calling this the year of the woman. I'd like it to not just be a year, but you've got Beyonce, you've got Taylor Swift. These people are making outsized impacts to the economy. And you're seeing, which I'm sure we'll talk to in a moment, record level viewing and interest in women's sports. So we saw all of this and we said, let's do something really special. And the marketing group just came back with something amazing. I love watching it. And not only has it been great, it's also allowed us to kick off a campaign internally where we now have women from all across our firm who've played sports talk and tell their story like I told yours, you know, what sports meant to them, what sports they played, but ultimately how it's influenced their career today. And we're just keeping this theme going.
We've had a lot of guests on this show who are passionate pioneers in investing in women's sports, including Andrea Brimmer from Ally Bank. And the numbers are compelling. I mean, I see them. Your team shared even more with me. The engagement in women's sports is growing, growing, growing. So I want you to speak a little bit about why, in your opinion, Lyra, isn't the money shifting as quickly as it should be, the sponsorship money? Because we're still way behind where it should be. So what's going on here?
Way behind. I'll start, maybe I'll back up, and just for the benefit of all of us to be level set up, maybe I'll just give some broad facts. The viewership for women's sports is high, and in many cases, it's higher than men's sports. That's one. Two, the return on investment that we see when we use women's sports images is higher than the ROI when we use men's sports images in many instances. When you look at engagement, when we have the same audience watching men's sports and women's sports, and you look at engagement like social media engagement, you're seeing greater engagement, greater level of conversation talking about the women's sports. And you're also seeing, I'll just say, growing attractive consumer behaviors. And let me give you, I'm an accountant by background, so I'm going to give you a couple facts. You know, when you look at it from a viewership perspective, take soccer. We have about the same amount of people watching men and women's soccer. About 350,000 people are watching the average soccer game for men and women in 2022. But the fees that they get, the rights fees that are paid to the women's league, is $1.8 million. And it's $90 million for Major League Soccer for men. So you're seeing about the same viewership and a radically different amount of rights. If you look at other teams or other sports like tennis, there is a trend and it continues that there are more viewers watching the women's U.S. Open, I think 1 million more than have watched the men's Open. And this last year with Coco's amazing final, she garnered a record amount of viewership for her final that never been had. And again, more than 1 million than the men's final. And if you look at the women's NCAA basketball championship, an amazing year last year, they had almost 10 million viewers versus beating Thursday Night Football, the Sugar Bowl, the baseball All-Star game, the WNBA All-Star event. All these things are showing that women are outperforming men from viewership. You're seeing it on the images, more engagement when there's an image and likeness deal. And you're also seeing it, which is amazing, around brand recall. You know, when you look at recall for brands, you know, two times greater recall around women's sports fans compared to men's sports fans. They're more likely, women are more likely to buy merchandise compared to men, particularly when it's involved with the sponsorships. So you're seeing this just amazing amount of, I'll say, benefits coming. And women's sports lags in rights. They only get 0.5% of total sports sponsorship dollars. And when you look at the brands themselves, that's a slight improvement. They're starting to see to be an uptick. We used to see about 10% of brands currently spending their money on women's sports versus men. But a large proportion, over 80%, are going to start to spend more on women's brands. So that's just some of the facts. I thought it would be helpful for all of us to level set. In summary, women's sports have upside potential commercially because of all those trends, yet the dollars going in just don't seem to be there. Why do I think that happens? I'll give you a couple thoughts. These are not data proven. I'll just say they're my own views. I think one, we just don't get data out there. We don't get the facts. I mean, your group, this group listening to this call today, this is what you all do for a living. But sometimes we don't aggregate information to make really good decisions. Starting to see the amount of opportunity here, if we get the data out, I do think is really helpful. I do think there still is some, and I don't think it's intentional, but I think there's still some bias in buying behaviors. Again, I think it's unconscious to put things towards things that are, I'll say, proven, but they may not reflect today's environment. When you start looking at where changing behaviors are, I think that's not a positivity. And I honestly don't think we as leaders in businesses and we as leaders in society do enough to celebrate the woman. I said earlier, it's the year of the woman. I want it to always be the day of the woman, the week of the woman, the year of the woman. And if people really understood the facts around how people are showing up and wanting to engage in women's sports and what it also means exponentially to their own societal impact, I think we would start to see an improving trend. But this is not a new phenomenon. This has been out for a long time where we see these one set of trends improving, but the actual benefits to women's sports and investment in women's sports pales in comparison to investments in men's sports. And that really hasn't changed.
It's a massive opportunity.
Massive.
For all of our brand leaders listening, it's a massive opportunity. It's time to get in because the ROI is amazing. The consumer habits have shifted. We're not talking about that. They have shifted. So it's time we catch up. So listen, Lara, we're getting to the end of our time together. I want to move to the creative brief, and this is a really fun section. And the first question for you is, what is the first brand you remember making an impact on you as a young girl?
Oh, that's a good one. Probably Nike. I remember being 10 years old and getting my first pair of Nike running shoes. And the positivity, it felt that there was actually a brand geared towards, I'll just say, making me a better version of in my sports world. And it became fashionable and chic to wear Nike. So I would say at a very young age, that's probably the one that stands out.
I can tell you were a very good accountant by how you rattled off that data. But I would like to know, what drew you to accounting as a young woman?
Well, this is going to be an interesting one for all of you. So I was exposed to what it meant to be an accountant when I was in middle school. I actually was at a class in my middle school where we did the books and records for Firehouse 123. Not every school has this, but it actually taught me what accounting was at a very young age. And I actually loved it. I had the same feeling in that class that I did when I would hit a homer in softball. And I realized at that moment that there was something about the rhythm of it that drew me to it. Now, what I've learned subsequently, that accounting is very little about the numbers and more about the story it tells. And it has immense opportunities for people who want to spend their time in this business. You learn how a business operates by knowing how they make their money. And unless we're all not-for-profits, it's a huge opportunity for people who invested in it. As you could probably tell, I'm pretty passionate about the profession.
As you look at your career, what was the one assignment that was the most challenging and at the same time an accelerator for your skills and development as a leader?
Yeah, probably as a youngish partner, I was asked to be the transformation leader for our audit business, which meant digitizing and modernizing a business that hadn't changed in 150 years. You know, our people were still using notepads and calculators. We weren't leveraging data. We weren't running as the outside world was running. And I was asked, ironically, because I probably was printing emails at that time, to be the leader to drive the change. It was by far the most challenging thing I'd ever been asked. I realized early on, if I didn't get 100% of what I had hoped to get done, that would be more than fine, because anything was better than where we were. But it meant being a leader of people who didn't have the same capabilities that I did, because I was bringing together technologists, people who understood data, people who understood organizational design, change management. And I had to learn how to get the very best out of a team. But probably the biggest challenge of all of it was to be a change agent with my own organization. 20,000 people that ultimately didn't want to change. There was no reason for them to show up one day and have a burning platform to change. And that by far was probably the best years of my life, because I got to go out and win the hearts and minds of so many people. But the hardest, because ultimately, if they did not commit to the change, we would not have been as successful as we ultimately ended up being.
What was your biggest lesson in getting people to feel like they wanted to change?
A little bit to what I alluded to earlier, that you have to accept that in organizational change, you typically have three populations. You have people that really want to change. I remember hearing a speaker talk about this as someone going over a bridge. There was probably 20%, 10 to 20% of our organization that was already over the bridge. You had them at a low, and that there was going to be a group of people that weren't going to get on the bridge. And rather than focusing all my energy on that group of people, just making sure they weren't toxic and putting all my energy on the people that were on the bridge and they weren't sure if they wanted to go backwards or forwards. And was the biggest, I'll say, change management lesson I've ever had, is trying to understand what was going to be the triggers for them. And it wasn't a one size fits all. In change management, it's the what's in it for me, and really understanding that group in the middle of the bridge, what was going to move them forward in their most as individualized a way I could get 15 people to feel individualized.
We talked a lot today about the power of sports for young women. For our young parents who have young daughters out there listening, what's your advice to them?
Sign them up to play sports. Try to give them confidence. Again, you don't have to be the best player of the team, but you can have the confidence to be on the team. Invest in training and learning, but don't force them to do something they really don't enjoy. My daughter played softball when she was yet really young, and she didn't want to play anymore. And I didn't try to force it. And then 5 years later, she asked me if she could go back and play softball again. I would also advise you to not be a coach to your own kids. Maybe this is my own lesson. You know, it's hard enough to get them to do their homework, but if you can, with the time you have, participating in anything on the team, be an assistant coach, be a coach to some of the other kids, engage, and ultimately let them know it's about having fun. You know, we often talk about life lessons being things that are super serious, but at the end of the day, having fun is something that they'll remember more than almost anything else. And so those would be a couple pieces of advice I'd give to parents with girls, and make sure they have, like, they know that being a girl rocks. Have the superpower to be a girl.
Who's been the most inspiring person in your life?
Oh boy, definitely my mom. My mom was born in the 1940s. She was the oldest of three. She's still alive. I'll talk about that in a second. She had a younger brother and sister, but when she came out of high school, she basically was told she could either go to a vocational school to be like a secretary or marry someone rich to take care of her. That was the environment she was in. You know, her brother, on the other hand, got to go to college and ironically became an accountant. And I watched my mom for the next 20 to 30 years work two jobs, raise four children, invest in her passion. She was passionate about the women's movement, and I would see her march. She would have me come and join her. And I got to observe a woman who was just super passionate. And those lessons spoke more to me than words. But probably the thing that I'm most proud of her was when I went to college, she enrolled herself in college. It was something she always wanted to do, despite the fact that her parents didn't allow her. And we both graduated from college at about the same time. So my mom has been just an amazing role model to me. She has taught me that with passion, ethics, doing the right thing, almost anything's possible. She used to say to me all the time, baby, you could be anything you want. And she showed me that that's possible.
Lara, that's where we need to end. That's a beautiful story.
Thank you.
And this was a wonderful conversation. It's been great to meet you. Good luck in everything you're doing as chair of Deloitte US. And thank you for this very inspiring and informative little session we've had.
I think there's an immense commercial opportunity in this space, but I also think it's the right thing to do for all of our daughters and their daughters and for the future of our world. getting these women to be able to show up with all the lessons learned can only make all of us better. So thank you all for everything you're going to do to help us do this together.
That was my conversation with Lara Abrash. Three takeaways from this one for your business, brand, and life. There was a lot in here about leading with purpose and being a leader who leads with purpose. Lara is outstanding. She sees purpose as her daily work. She sees activating a purpose as their company strategy, and she sees activating purpose as a competitive advantage. Second takeaway, change management. Lara talked an awful lot about an experience in her career where she had a massive change management challenge and how she viewed it as a bridge. There are some that are on the bridge that are trying to get across, some who will never get on the bridge, and those that are over the bridge. And that metaphor helped her lead through that experience and become an even better leader. And then the last takeaway, the incredible power of sports and teamwork in helping women develop into top leaders. This was a great discussion about sports and teaching women teamwork and teaching women grit, resilience, refining skills, the ups and downs of life in business and in general. So the power of sports for young women was a really, really powerful theme and a very thoughtful one.
That's it for this episode of the CMO Podcast. If you found this helpful and entertaining, I would be so grateful if you could share our show with your friends. And I would be super happy if you subscribed so you can be updated as we publish new episodes. And if you really want to help, leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The CMO Podcast is a Gallery Media Group original production.